Hey everyone, Pat here. Just wanted to take a brief moment to say how sad I am about the news about Dwayne McDuffie passing away. I only got a chance to meet Dwayne once, and it was at San Diego Comic-Con a couple of years ago. And he was very nice and very gracious with his time. And, I'm just devastated by it, because I don't really know the guy well, but a lot of his work has really had a profound effect on me. And like I said, he's a really nice guy. I mean, this is going to sound really strange, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but, you know, I think I remember, one of the things I remember the most from him is the fact that, I have him as a friend on Facebook, and on my birthday, he actually left me, a birthday post in my, over at my wall. And it sounds kind of dumb that I'm gushing over that, but the fact is, he is one of my favorite writers. He is one of my, one of the guys that I really look up to as far as, his work and his professionalism and and just the way he has conducted himself online and everywhere else. And that really touched me, that he would take the time to leave this nobody, a little birthday greeting. That's, I always remember that. But I'm really sad over what happened, and I really hope that more people will learn to appreciate his work, and at the same time, let's not wait for someone to pass away before we show how much we enjoy or appreciate their work. There's a lot of us who are online, and we can just send a nice tweet or a post on a writer's wall or an artist's wall on Facebook or something. Leave them a nice comment, tell them how much you appreciate their work, because you never know when you'll ever get when someone could just go. And just learn to appreciate the people you have, the people whose work you enjoy, and probably appreciate the people most importantly. So that's it. Enjoy the show. How's it going, everybody? You're listening to Loikamania, episode 27. I am, of course, Pat Loika, and today there's quite a bit of stuff to talk about. I'm not doing it alone. My good friend Antonio Cuneo is here. Say hello, Antonio.
What's up?
And Antonio is a buddy of mine that I've known from the Jinx World boards of Brian Michael Bendis' board for quite a while, and become really good friends from there. We always do the New York Comic Con. We're roommates pretty much every year, and like me we appreciate the finer things in life, like good movies, comic books, and even pro wrestling. So how are you doing today, buddy? What you been up to?
Today I didn't do anything today.
Really?
I woke up at 2:00 and I was like, "Oh, I've wasted the day. There's nothing for me to do." So I caught up with a little TV, and then I just kind of waited for Raw to start tonight.
Raw was actually pretty interesting this week, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah.
Actually, we were talking for a little bit before this, and there have been quite a bit of good comics the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I was very pleased with a lot of the books that I picked up. Especially, seriously, this last week was just phenomenal. You know, between Avengers Academy, Uncanny X-Force, Wolverine and Jubilee, and the Amazing Spider-Man 654.1, and actually also the newest issue, Thunderbolts, which, you know, I absolutely loved. And then from last week, there's Wolverine 5.1, and there's a bunch of others, but we'll kind of focus on what we'll talk about for a bit. Let's start with the Avengers Academy. It seems to be focusing more on Finesse and of course, the Taskmaster.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, there's, as an individual issue, it doesn't really work because there's a lot of stuff from other books and from previous issues that if this is just one random issue you're picking up, it's not going to really follow well. But, I mean, it establishes the plot pretty well. And it's nice to see McCone back on art.
I love his Taskmaster. I think everything he draws is great, I think. I think you mentioned that it wouldn't really work well as a standalone. I think if you were to just read the parts involving Finesse and the Taskmaster, I think it works out fine. But there is quite a bit of baggage that's carried from the last few issues, particularly with Tigra. I thought that was a really, really cool really, really cool bit, though. I mean, especially when you get to the end, and we try not to spoil stuff here. We'll be very vague about it, but the ending was really interesting, I thought. I don't know what it means, but it's really interesting. But I'm sure they'll revisit it.
For me, it's a little weird, mm-hmm. because, like, I see what Bendis is doing with, like, you know, the Hood and stuff. Mm-hmm. In New Avengers or Avengers, yeah. And it's like we're kind of falling backwards to like with the, I don't know. It's just like they have no real. I don't know which story to follow in the sense of what's happening with this character.
Well, because
in past issues, they make him look like weak, and then in Bendis's stuff, he's like. You know, the Infinity Gems.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this is what led up to him hunting down the Infinity Gems, what happened to him in the last couple issues here. Because, okay. You know, yeah, because he realizes, you know, he's weak and he's, you know, he's out in the open. So, it made a lot of sense that he would just go for that. But, yeah we were talking about McCone. I love how he's able to somehow make the Taskmaster's mask emote. You know, the facial expressions are phenomenal. Yeah,
totally. I mean, it's a friggin' skull. But yeah. You could tell, like, what he's thinking.
Yeah. And I like that there's like, a very serious moment there where he kind of has a... Where they kind of have a serious exchange between him and Finesse. And this is minor spoilers, but if you've read the Taskmaster miniseries that Fred Van Lente...
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a fantastic series by Fred Van Lente and Hefty Paolo. They mention that... you know, there's something up in Taskmaster's memory, and he's unable to keep. Like, he copies so many moves and memorizes so many moves, and that he, you know, he loses actual, you know, personal information, like, you know, his real name and all that stuff. So he kind of tells Finesse here about that, and you know, it's possible that he may or may not be Finesse's dad after all, but.
I actually like that they brought that in from the Taskmaster miniseries. That was really cool.
Yeah, I'm really happy that they're paying attention to that. I mean, it's such a small thing as far as continuity goes to just mention that, but you know, I like that it played a part in this. So you're you're not sure, but there's a possibility anyway that they could be related. So
It's funny because, like, when you read, if you've read that that miniseries, the Taskmaster miniseries, it's just so completely over the top, ridiculous. But
Gone of the Dead,
it's so fun.
Oh, I know, I love it.
And Hefty Paolo he's one of my favorite artists at Marvel. You know, was he on Doctor Voodoo with Remender, yeah. But like before that. I forgot what he did, but...
He did the Black Panther Secret Invasion stuff, which was awesome.
Oh, yeah, with Jason Aaron. That stuff was great. Mm-hmm. And I think the first time I saw his art was... It was an X-Force, like...
Ain't No Dog, I think.
Yeah, No Dog. He did the Charlie Houston story, who, you know, I'm a big Charlie Houston fan, so I got that for that. And I don't know, I just like Hefty's art with that X-Force Wolverine costume, which I love. Mm-hmm. I like his art, and it's pretty awesome. It's, you know, it's, like, sick, but, you know, it's cool and gritty, and it fits for whatever he does, especially like in the point one for Wolverine with Jason Aaron.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, we'll move on. Actually, and that's a good segue to the next book, which is see, look at that. You've never done a podcast before, and yet here you are. You're podcasting like a pro. We'll jump right into Wolverine 5.1 by Jason Aaron, Heftapolo, and Nathan Fairbairn. And this was, you know how for the longest time, every time we wait to Wolverine's birthday, Sabretooth just shows up to mess with him, basically. And here, now that Sabretooth is gone, we really haven't celebrated Wolverine's birthday in a while. So we have this the setup here where his girlfriend Melita sets up a surprise party for him, and and she invites a lot of the superhero people, you know, to the party. And Deadpool. And Deadpool makes a complete idiot of himself, which is, you know, usual.
Standard fare.
Yeah, yeah. And this is just such a fun issue because you can kind of see that no matter what Logan thinks, he acts like he's the complete loner, yet there's a lot of people that actually give a crap about him. You know, a lot of people care about him.
Yeah, yeah.
So they all showed up. And even Beast. And I like the little reference to what's going on Uncanny with Beast. And
oh, yeah, with Beast and Iceman.
Yeah. Which is, you know, which I find kind of funny.
It's nice to see Iceman get some screen time.
Mm-hmm. And
it's like a panel.
Mm-hmm. And there's also that great panel with all the girls that Wolverine is kind of friendly or close to, where they're like, they're basically asking if they know what they're getting into, if Melita knows what she's getting into with Wolverine. So I thought that was great, and then of course there's the subplot with the truck driver the Wolverine rescues, and that was a lot of fun too, you know.
Yeah, but those brothers, the Buzzard Brothers.
Yeah, the Buzzard Brothers.
I'm actually looking forward to when they show up next in the main Wolverine issue series, especially with what we see at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was some good stuff. I would like to see Apollo on an ongoing book. I mean, I don't know what he's working on.
Yeah, these days. Same here. I mean, I guess he was given an ongoing book, which we all knew wasn't going to last that long, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. But I could see him alternating. I would love to see him on. What book would he be good in?
I like that idea that Marvel's doing now with the alternate. Artist switch, because it just works. And you know what? You could probably squeeze out like maybe a couple extra issues a year instead of the 12. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm enjoying that. I like that they're doing that. But Hefte could. I could totally see him on X-Force. I could totally see him on Venom with Remender and Moore.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like a cool switch.
Yeah, I would Remender totally be down with that. Hefte.
Yeah,
I think he would be great on X-Force. Actually, he certainly has the art style that would work. You know, it's fairly somewhat dark. I mean, you know, if you read this week's issue, I mean, Esad Ribic is not, you know, is not Jerome Pena. Esad Ribic. Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, we have a funny Esad Ribic story, but I can't really share that here.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to get into it, but I'm going on like my word of never buying any of his comics. But you know, I have to buy X-Force because it's such a great book, and I like Remender as a writer. I'm really getting into his stuff. I read some stuff he did at Dark Horse, and I don't know. I like it. I want to support his books because I think he's a great writer. Esad Ribic's art is actually pretty good because I don't think I've ever seen his not painted art.
Mm-hmm.
But I dig it. But it's Jerome Opeña just killed on this book.
Yeah, Opeña is amazing. But you know, said. Well, you know, Ribic is not Opeña, and you know, neither is Paolo. But Paolo, I think, would fit in perfectly with the style that this book has got going for it.
Yeah.
And now that we're on X-Force, actually, we'll jump into the newest issue, which is Uncanny X-Force number 5. And set, we, you know, yeah, man, we need to stop pointing this out.
No, that just, it reminds me of Doug Benson, the comedian, was on a, what's that show, Last Comic Standing one time, and he did this whole bit on segues, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, Benson's actually been becoming one of my favorites lately, because I've been listening to his Doug Loves Movies podcast, and I'm thinking of actually, like, you know, shelling out the cash for the Benson interruption stuff that he's been doing. You know, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, back to X-Force. This is a new arc, and of course it's by Rick Remender, as we mentioned earlier, and illustrated by Esad Ribic. And it's inked by, I think it's John Lucas, and it's colored by Matt Wilson. And I dig the story. I mean, we start out with Phantom X, and I think while the Phantom X stuff and the Deathlok stuff was cool, I think my favorite bit from this whole issue was the little meeting at Cavern X between, you know, Wolverine, Angel, Psylocke, and Deadpool. And within those few pages, they've actually made Deadpool into a very, very three-dimensional character. Because he can come across as being one note a lot of times because of the way he's written, you know, the way he's portrayed. He's just, you know, the funny guy. But here, like, who would have thought that he had a conscience? You know, he had all these feelings towards what they just went through in the recent story arc.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think it fits in line with the whole I want to be a superhero type thing now. And, I mean, I don't know if they're going with that, but, I mean, it makes sense if you've been reading the Deadpool ongoing by Daniel Way.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I saw that coming, but the thing is, I mean, if you're just reading Uncanny X-Force and not Deadpool, and you just read, you know, the first four issues, and then you read this, you're just like, oh, wow, this guy, there's more to him than I thought. And
it's
very interesting, you know?
Well, yeah, I agree with you, because I agree with what you said about just, you know, everyone playing Deadpool as, like, the comedy guy. And you know what? I mean, if you've been reading Daniel Way's run, he does that very well. But it's also cool to see, like, a different side to Deadpool than just, oh, I got a big gun and I'm going to blow shit up.
Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased with the characterization here. I thought the argument that they were all having was valid. And, you know, especially the way last issue ended, you know, there was no dialogue after that big...
It was pretty dark.
It was. I've loaned that book to my friend Chris, who I had on last week.
Yeah.
And he was like... you know, from out of the blue, I just got a text message from, like, I just read Uncanny X-Force. That was messed up. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, dude.
It was so good.
And I'm actually interested in seeing what Remender does with the Deathlocks, because I really like that Deathlock arc Jason Aaron did on before he relaunched Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I thought that story arc was just awesome. Like, I love future stuff. Especially when done by a good writer, but also when it's not, you know, it's not the future. You know, that's not the specific future. Mm-hmm. So I love when they do stuff like that, because they can do anything because they know it's not the future coming. It's just story.
Yeah. And they tend to have a bit more free reign to do whatever they want.
Right, exactly.
That's part of the appeal for that type of story. But
I gotta say that Jason Aaron arc, that stuff had me laughing out loud so much. Like those interactions between Spider-Man and the Thing.
Oh yeah,
there was some really funny stuff where I was just sitting there reading and I would be laughing out loud.
Yeah, he's Jason Aaron. He's quite underrated as far as his humor goes, because we were so used to him in Scalped and Wolverine, you know, which has gone on a somewhat dark direction in the last few issues. Have you been take a detour for a bit? Have you been reading Wolverine like the ongoing right now?
Yeah.
Did you get this week's issue?
Yes, I read that.
Oh man, that was so cool. I'm a big Daniel Acuna fan, so I love that issue.
Yeah, I've opened up to his art. in the recent weeks with his Deadpool. No, was Black Widow. Mm-hmm. His opening arc with Black Widow with Marjorie Liu was mm-hmm. fantastic.
Yeah, that was a really good arc, and I thought his take on the X-Men here, which was fantastic. Wolverine number 6 is what we're referring to. It's part one of Wolverine yeah. versus the X-Men. And there, that whole bit where you see, you know, the Wolverine protocols is basically Cyclops' backup plan in case Wolverine goes nuts. And I just love the fact that he utilizes Magneto and Namor, and you know, just having them do what they do best.
You love those guys.
What's that?
You love Magneto. Oh, yeah. Namor. Anyone who knows you, it's like, hi, I'm Pat Loika. I love Magneto and Namor.
Oh, because they're awesome.
And Emma.
Yeah. So I saw that, look, all
you got to do is to win me over is put the Ghost Riders and Mystique and Damian Hellstorm.
They were all there. That was awesome.
It was fun for all. Yeah. No, I'm actually interested in seeing Cyclops handle this because. Well, as I read an interview with Jason Aaron, and he was talking about how many times Wolverine's been, like, brainwashed and controlled and all that shit. So it's like, once it's like, all right, and he's the dangerous mutant, the most dangerous mutant in the world. You should have a plan. And I'm glad he's actually bringing that idea to the books.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably one of the best things about this story. And, of course, the fact that the plan is very reliant on two somewhat, I guess, unpredictable people, like, you know, particularly Namor and Magneto. The fact that it's dependent on those two is pretty great. I love...
Cyclops say that was just one scenario?
Well, yeah, that's true, but I don't know who else he would have. I don't know who else is equipped to handle this.
I agree with you. I mean, yeah, they show that the Cyclops protocol Wolverine thing at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then the next page is like, oh, who do you think can take Wolverine? Oh, Colossus is all metal. He's pretty tough. And then there he is, beat up and cut up
from the last issue.
Yeah.
That was cool. But yeah, Wolverine. I have never been this excited about Wolverine in a long time, and combining this and X-Force, it's just great. I mean, really, the fact that I'm excited about reading Wolverine, go ahead.
I actually, it annoys me that so many comic book fans complain about Wolverine being in all the comics. And look, I understand that Wolverine is like a selling point,
mm-hmm.
that people are more likely to pick up a comic book because Wolverine's in it. Like the Catherine Immonen book, Wolverine and Jubilee.
Oh,
but at the same time, it's like if you have a good writer, he's not going to just use Wolverine as just a character that's there that beats up people and stuff. Good writers will utilize the characters to their just fullest extent. I mean, I love Wolverine in Bendis's Avenger books, mm-hmm. because he steps up. He's not a leader. He's not like a full-on leader like Cyclops, mm-hmm. or like Cap. But when there's shit to be done and stuff to be discussed, he steps up.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they're able to turn Wolverine into a team player. You know, it's fun to see him be more than just the loner. And, you know, I mean, there are books where if you want to see Wolverine the loner, there are many books you can pick up for that. And you can pick up, if you want to see Wolverine interacting with different characters, you have all these other books, which are great, like the X-Men books and Avenger books. But go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned Wolverine versus Jubilee. I never would have thought that this would be one of the most enjoyable books I would buy in the last couple of months. It's probably one of the most beautiful looking books I've seen too, because it's drawn by Phil Noto.
He's an amazing artist.
Yeah, I love his work, and I'm surprised. I'm honestly shocked that this has come out on time twice already, and because he takes a while to do his work, and that's something I've known for a while. But yeah, who would have thought that Jubilee could be more compelling? I mean, I complained about I didn't like that they turned her into a vampire. But she's actually never been this interesting in a long time, and I like the fact that she kind of, there's something in this character again. Like this character was awakened because of what happened here to her, you know.
Right.
And I think she's, she could become something far greater than what she's been for the last few years. I mean, she's been the butt of all the jokes for the longest time anyway. So yeah. Now she has real power, you know. She has, of course, the weaknesses. She's a vampire, but since she's got all their strengths, too, like, you know, super strength, and I think she can fly, or can she fly? I don't even know that yet.
I'm not sure. I've seen Buffy and Angel, and I've read some vampire stuff, but flying is only, like, for Dracula. Because he's, like, the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been enjoying the book, and I'm actually the only reason I picked it up because it was $2.99. And I mean, I like Iaminen. I think she's a good writer. I loved her Runaways.
Yes.
Yeah, and Phil Noto is a really great artist, so I knew I was going to get a good book.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the X-Men vampire stuff. I thought that was, I don't know, like it really got me into X-Men and. Again, because I have my issues with Uncanny X-Men.
I understand that, but yeah, it's. I actually at first was very apprehensive towards the vampire X-Men stuff, but then I read when I picked it up, I stopped, and then I realized I'm almost done with the book anyway, so I just followed it through, and that turned out to be I was very satisfied with how that book turned out. And, of course, yeah. Cyclops got to have another badass moment there with what he did with Wolverine.
And now Chris Pachala's drawing the new arc, so that'll... All you need to do is get Chris Pachala on art, and I'll buy that book.
Oh, yeah, Pachala is great.
I was so happy to see that his name on, like, Bendis' Avengers for the new solicitations for May.
Is it on the regular Avengers book, or was it in
yeah, it was Avengers. It was Avengers, because I think Mike Deodato is still doing new Avengers.
Okay. Yeah, I was really sad when Stuart Immonen left New Avengers. That's still something I'm kind of saddened by. But, you know...
Yeah, bigger and better, man.
Yeah. Good for him, but yeah, I thought he was perfect there.
I wasn't crazy about the Utopia stuff that Fraction did a couple summers ago, so I'll be interested to see how he can handle like a full on crossover.
Yeah, I think with Utopia though is the fact that he's focused on characters and the thing is he had 2 months to do. He had such a short time period to do all that. So I can kind of, I had some issues with particularly the final issue, because there were some, they teased a lot of good stuff that they didn't follow up on, which was my biggest problem with it. Like, there was a cool scene where it looks like Archangel and Bullseye are going to fight, and then we cut away and we never see that again. I think that was just one of the few things I had a problem with. But, you know, overall, I liked how it ended, and it more than made up for that little problem with me. I think Fraction would be, I think he's certainly grown since then. I think he can do a kick-ass event book. I think it'll be fun.
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what he comes up with.
Yeah. And writers kind of coming into their own, picking up Spider-Man during the whole Brand New Day thing, I thought Dan Slott's stuff always stood out. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. His stuff was some of my favorite during that run. And finally, now he gets to be the sole writer on Amazing Spider-Man. He gets to run the ship by himself. And I think he's been turning out some of his best work. And I don't know if you picked particularly 654.1 was really good.
But before we talk about that, I just want to say that I think the problem with before the just Dan Slott writing the book was that, I mean, for me, I thought the stories that stood out the most were the ones written by Joe Kelly. I just thought those stories were fantastic and really just beautiful to the way it not only spoke to the character of Spider-Man, but to like each particular villain that was being showcase at the time. Like, I know he did the Rhino story arc, which I thought was fantastic. But I think the problem that book suffered with for those 2 years that it had switching writers and artists was there was no definitive voice on the book.
Well, yeah, that's, so, that's,
That's it was all a bunch of ideas, and as good as those ideas could be or were, there was just no one voice making decisions. It was always kind of like Spider-Man was being pulled this way and then pulled that way and then pulled another way. And it was cool to have Spider-Man come out 3 times a month, but I'm liking Slott a lot more now that he's writing his by himself than with a team.
Yeah, that's something that you expect though. If you have a writing community basically handling one book, and there are, you go from various Guggenheim had a somewhat serious take.
I never liked anything he wrote.
I don't know, on Spider-Man,
I wasn't a big fan.
I mean, I loved his Blade and I loved his Wolverine run, but I didn't care for his issues of Spidey. And then when it was Slott, I enjoyed Slott stuff a lot.
I like Slott stuff, but I was a big fan of Joe Kelly's stuff.
Joe Kelly was great. Wade was great.
Wade's. Glad Bob Gale didn't do much.
Yeah, Bob Gale was kind of off, I thought, but
Van Lente came into his own in those.
Oh yeah, he was really great.
That Chameleon story was great.
Yeah, that was great. That was all kinds of messed up.
And messed up, but it was pretty cool. Like it was a cool story. It's like, okay, that's a great idea to do Chameleon.
Yeah, they've never really done that much damage to Spidey with Chameleon, and he pulled it off right there. And at any rate, though, I mean, with the point one issue, we get to focus on the new Venom, which is Flash Thompson. It's drawn by, it's written by Humberto Dan Slott. Humberto Ramos. My God, he is so good.
I love this book.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
I think it's a really friggin' cool idea to use the Venom symbiote. Mm-hmm. As a government weapon, and to give it to Flash, it's pretty cool. Like, the only thing I didn't like was, like, the limitation of missions that Flash was going to do.
Well, I like that, though. I think it's basically for the host's safety, because we already know what happens to people if they've been bonded with somebody else for too long. So I think it works, but now it makes it interesting though, because whoever ends up with the suit next could be someone else, That's
right. Pretty much what it is. If that happens, because as we saw in this point one issue, I guess Marvel invented a new term in venoming out instead of hulking out.
Yeah, and when he venomed out here, that was pretty intense.
Yeah. I love that banker dude. He's like, mm-hmm. What just happened?
Mm-hmm. Man, and poor Flag Smasher. I was like, man, they brought back Flag Smasher. This is awesome. And then like, oh no.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm really looking forward to the Remender book. It'll be cool getting to know Flash Thompson a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And, I'm glad Tony Moore's drawing. If anyone deserves a book, man, of like this quality, it's Tony Moore.
Did you hear what happened to Tony Moore's pages, though?
Yeah, I heard about that. That's a shame.
They got stolen. And yeah. Actually, they went missing, and then they were returned, but they're all destroyed.
People are assholes, man.
Yeah, that's just low. Stupid FedEx, man. Apparently it's FedEx, and they're not doing anything about it. Whatever. That's just such a terrible thing to do to someone, that's his livelihood,
I mean that's how he pays the bills.
I bet that jackass probably stole it and he got in trouble and he was forced to return it, and that's what he did.
Yeah,
I don't know, that's just awful. And I don't know if that will set the book back, because that's quite a few pages that he had to he'll have to redraw.
Or were they sent back to him?
Yeah, they sent him back to him, but they're all destroyed.
No. Well, it doesn't matter. It's just a shitty thing for
yeah
happen.
Okay, well, at any rate, Amazing Spider-Man 654.1 was great.
Yeah.
I want to see. I can't wait to see more of him, and of course, I'm looking forward to, like, the little teaser at the end of, you know, what's coming this year.
Yeah.
Spidey. That's that'll get people talking, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was the last week that was. Or the week before was the final issue in the Caselli arc. So Marcos Martin is next. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yes. Man, that's going to be good.
And the solicitations that came out in May, I'm looking forward to, because Christos Gage is doing a small guest arc with the Avengers Academy.
All right. Yeah, I saw the covers for that, actually. Those are really cool. Yeah. I think it was McGinnis drawing the covers. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure.
Man, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll kind of put a stop to the comic stuff for a bit, and I mentioned wanting to see that. I saw a movie this week that I was very happy with. It was something I was looking forward to for a while now. Actually, I've been seeing the trailers for a long time, but I just couldn't find a theater that showed this film until recently. And that's Cedar Rapids. Have you seen this movie?
Yes, I saw it this past weekend too, and I feel the same way that you do. And it's kind of funny because the week before I checked if any theater like near me was showing it, and there was nothing. Mm-hmm. And then my friend's like, "Oh, I got off next weekend. Let's go see a movie." And I was like, "All right." I'm like, he's like, "What do you want to see?" And he's like, "Oh, let's go see I Am Number 4."
Oh, and, God.
And I was like, "Oh, I don't know if I want to see that." And then he's like, "Well, what?" I'm like, "Unknown comes out, you know, maybe we could go see that." He's like, "All right." So like the day we were gonna hang out. I was at work and I was checking movie websites, and I saw one of my favorite websites put up a review for I Am Number 4. I was like, "All right, let's see how this movie's doing." Mm-hmm. They gave it an F.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I was like, "All right, I'm glad I'm not seeing this movie." And then, like right after, they also had a review of The Unknown, and I'm like, "All right, let's see if I'm gonna enjoy paying to see this movie." And that movie got a D minus, so I was like, "Shit, this." So I looked it up again. I wanted to see if Cedar Rapids was playing anywhere near me, and it was. And I called up my friend. I was like, "We're going to go see Cedar Rapids tonight." He's like, "What's that?" I'm like, "Just look up the trailer at home, and we're going to go see that tonight. No questions." And I it turned out to be awesome.
Yeah, I really loved that movie. I thought it was it's something that's very relatable. You know, and at the same time, it's Ed Helms. He seems to be getting a lot of these roles where he's somewhat of the. I mean, he reminds me of his character from The Hangover here, where he's
a little tight, a little not, you know, worldly.
Yeah. But
nice, nice dude.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and he kind of reminded me of that. But at any rate, I thought he was really good. With the role, I love this. I think more than him, though, I like the supporting cast a lot. I thought Anne Heche, Isaiah Whitlock, and John C. Reilly were phenomenal in this movie.
I'm a big fan of John C. Reilly. Yeah. It took me like a little bit to like, you know, warm up to him, but like after seeing Step Brothers and after seeing Cyrus, I don't know if you saw that with Jonah Hill.
I have not seen that yet, actually. That's something I need to do.
I actually, me and, you know, Matt Nevin, those guys, we saw that when me and Matt went to visit Evan last summer, and it was really funny.
I will look into that. That's one of those few movies that I haven't seen yet.
I think you dig it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, this movie, I thought Ed Helms was great. I'm actually happy that he's getting, like, these kind of movie roles. Because, I mean, I don't, you know, with Steve Carell leaving The Office, I don't know how much longer that show's going to last.
Yeah, I know, right?
But, I mean, I've actually enjoyed Ed Helms since, like, the beginning of The Office. So, you know, seeing him succeed is kind of, you know, it's cool. And for him to do this movie, too, I just really enjoyed, I thought it was just a really funny movie.
Yeah, I thought all the characters were great. They really had good chemistry together, I thought, all four of them. And when they're all together, it's so much fun. But honestly, the one of the main reasons I saw this movie is I saw that Isaiah Whitlock Jr. was in this movie, and I'm a big Wire fan, and you know he was on The Wire.
The HBO program The Wire.
Yes, he was in that. He was in that show as a corrupt state senator, you know, Clay Davis. And the fact that he's there and he makes a reference to The Wire, not once but twice, cracked me up.
Yeah, I knew that from, I know I'm a big TV guy, but I haven't seen The Wire yet, so I know,
shame on you.
I know, but I knew that he was on The Wire, and so I thought those jokes were really funny, but I saw an interview with Ed Helms, and when they hired him for the movie, they were thinking about taking those references out. But they were funny. They were really like I don't know. It was just like the joke where the really schooled. But like proper black man trying to talk ghetto is just as funny as like a white guy trying to talk ghetto.
And he really did it. He did it really well too. You know, because the way he played the character is like it doesn't sound like something he would pull off. But then when he starts talking, like whoa,
yeah,
that's great. I thought also I thought. Actually, one of the funniest things about it is the way Ed Helms handles his relationships. I thought the way he was with Sigourney Weaver's character and with Anne Heche's character was great.
Yeah. Oh, and then later with I don't know how to say her last name, but Mia, she played what's her name on Arrested Development?
Yeah, I didn't realize that was her. Elia Shawkat, right?
Yeah, maybe on Arrested Development.
Yeah, that's her. I saw that. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Where did she come from?
The supporting cast was really cool because, like, it was her, and then you had, like, Kurtwood Smith, the dad from that 70s show.
Yeah.
And then there was Mike O'Malley there, too, and Stephen Root, he's always great.
I completely forgot that was Stephen Root, and so I saw the credits, like, whoa, that's Stephen Root.
Yeah.
He just really disappeared into that character, I thought.
Yeah, no, I've seen, like, he's a great character actor. Mm-hmm. And, like, when he needs to be really funny, like in Dodgeball, he can be. But, like, if it calls for a straight man in a comedy, it's pretty good. I really enjoy the movie a lot.
Yeah, that's I'm really glad I was able to find it. I mean, there's only one theater in San Diego that was showing this movie, believe it or not, and I was really disappointed.
Yeah, dude, same here in Long Island.
Mm-hmm. But at least, it happened, and I got to see it, and I was very pleased. I had to drive, about 30 minutes from home, and it actually was a rainy day, too, so it was a pain in the ass to get there, but it was so worth it because it was such a great film. That's something I'll eventually pick up in Blu-ray or DVD or whatever.
One of those like indie comedies that I really just want to have because I think it'll definitely be worth it on replay value.
Yeah, and there's so many good jokes, so many great lines and quotes from there too. Between Geronimo and John C. Reilly's characters, there's so much great.
Show some teeth.
Yes. Speaking of dudes that show their teeth.
Yeah.
We'll talk about wrestling real quick before we put an end to this thing. Are you like me? You saw yesterday's pay per view, the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I thought it was a decent show.
It was a decent show.
Matches were great. I just did not like the outcome of that second chamber match.
It was so abrupt.
And the thing is,
honestly, they set up all this stuff with like Punk getting eliminated and then reinstated, and then like Punk taking out Orton and John Morrison, and to have give us 2-3 minutes of John Cena battling. Get that world title shot instead of just like, oh, attitude adjustment.
You know what I noticed, though, is that they were running out of time, I think. Because when by the time they got to that point, they had like 5 minutes before 8. It was 5 to 8. And
it was 11 out here. Yeah. So it was like John Morrison and John Cena and CM Punk were still in the match, and there was like 5 minutes left till 11. I was like, damn, this is going on. This is going to cut it pretty close, which is why I guess there was an abrupt ending, but still. They went 20, 25 minutes over with with Raw last week when The Rock showed up.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's The Rock, though. Unfortunately, that didn't pay off with ratings, which kind of sucked for them. But I was going to say, that match, I don't know what happened. They had so much filler material in the middle of the show that they could have gone and do like a decent
match should have been cut. But I guess it wouldn't have.
They could have gotten rid of the Trish Stratus stuff.
Yeah, they could have saved that for Raw when more people would be watching because it's free. Mm-hmm. Instead of paying $50 for a pay per view,
yeah,
but I thought John Morrison was amazing. Yeah. Him and Sheamus impressed me the most in the Raw Chamber. I've seen Sheamus wrestle, and he's just really brutal about the way he wrestles and like makes it look real, like he's really punishing the wrestler. Mm. And you know, I was really impressed by Sheamus, and then if you're not impressed by John Morrison and the shit he did, mm-hmm. just come on.
Really disappointed with the way
the guy climbed the dome and jumped on somebody.
Yeah, that was insane. And he had a lot of good spots in that match too. I thought it was a really good showcase for him and for Sheamus. Even though I'm really disappointed with what they've been doing with Sheamus lately and having him, they're jobbing him to hell, really.
Yeah, especially after tonight's Raw.
Yeah, but it looks like they have a plan for him based off of the fact that they had that little backstage thing with him and Daniel Bryan earlier. So,
yeah, I don't know. I don't see how that can lead to Daniel Bryan not getting destroyed.
Well, yeah, that's. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I don't believe. Unfortunately, in their writers right now, but
no, because honestly, if you want a good match for WrestleMania, don't set up Orton and Punk, because that match is going to be boring. Because Orton sucks.
Oh, I tell him the story in WrestleMania. Yeah, there is something about him that I'm still not quite sure.
You want a match? You want good spots? John Morrison versus Punk. But if you're not going to use Punk, And if you want to use Punk and Orton, you have to elevate Punk, and you have to make Punk beat Orton. I don't want to see Orton winning again. And if you're not going to give John Morrison a huge match at WrestleMania, bring back Money in the Bank, make him win because he deserves a title.
He should be a main eventer already.
He should be.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. That's why I don't trust the creative team they have going right now, because they would tease that they would elevate someone, and then they would all of a sudden just not do it. They would just renege on it.
Honestly, what was it, a couple months ago after Miz became champion, mm-hmm. and John Morrison was a number one contender, mm-hmm. I thought they were going to save that for friggin' pay-per-view.
For the Rumble.
That's next week on Raw. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a great match. Save it for the pay-per-view.
I know. But, like I said, they're very short-sighted, or they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they want to do with their people. They don't know what exactly they want. I mean, right now they're kind of getting better because clearly they have a plan now. They know what they're doing. At least when it comes to this coming, because it's WrestleMania. They have to have something.
And that's the only reason it's been as good or it's been good, because they're leading up to Mania and they want people to buy the pay per view. Mm-hmm. Last week, The Rock. This tonight, The Undertaker and Triple H come back.
Yeah, man, it's like
that standoff was. I thought it was really smart not to get verbal. I thought just a stare down, and then Undertaker doing that neck slash thing, and then Triple H doing the crotch chop was better. That went better than anything they could have said.
Yeah. Although I did notice the look on the Undertaker's eyes, he looks like he does not really. The way he's looking at Triple H is like, who are you? I don't even remember who you are. What's your name?
I remember they had a match at WrestleMania a couple of WrestleManias ago.
Yeah,
and it was pretty good.
Yeah, and Triple H lost that one. He even had Motorhead playing the opening theme. Like, you know, he had Motorhead there playing his song. I was like, oh man, they even brought out Motorhead just for him to lose.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But you know what? I wasn't expecting Triple H tonight on Raw, I'll tell you that.
I was kind of expecting it. Well, then again, I read and listen to the Observer and all, you know, all those, the dirt sheets, basically, what they call them. And then sure. I kind of, you know, from what they've been talking about, they've been kind of predicting it all along. And they had, go ahead. No, they had to bring back Triple H eventually, though. You know, he's been away for too long. I think the only thing that they haven't addressed is, you know, what the hell to do with the whole Sheamus thing, because Sheamus took him out. So
right.
It looks like they're skipping past that part.
Yeah. I mean, I knew they were going to bring Triple H back. I just didn't think it was going to be tonight. Especially, like, it was a good psych out because, like, you got, I think that the Undertaker's entrance is one of the, is not one of the, it's the best entrance in wrestling of all time.
Uh-huh.
And so for all that, you know, he just takes his time, mm-hmm. the music, it's dark, it sets the mood, mm-hmm. and like he takes off his hat and it looks like he's going to go over and grab a microphone mm-hmm. to speak, and then Triple H's music hits. I honestly wasn't expecting that. So that was a cool surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was expecting that someone was going to interrupt him, but I didn't realize it was going to be in that fashion where, you know, nobody even got a chance to say anything really, and it's great, and then I'm glad that, you know, they didn't waste words, they didn't do anything, because that you know, the impact of the moment is really in the fact that these people are standing there, and you don't really need anything else, because that'll just spoil it, you know?
Right, exactly.
You're basically, if you had them talk, you're basically just overriding something which is very, very simple, and I'm glad they let go of that and just let them do their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, what else?
That should be
John Cena, main event. WrestleMania, don't care.
I don't care either, but who knows? It could be.
I was talking with my friend during Raw, and I told him, I swear to God, if Miz walks away at WrestleMania still champion, I will shit my pants.
that's I don't know, not possible.
Exactly. It's like, but like. What does this mean for John Cena? It's going to be like his, 10th title win? Like, what does that mean anymore? It's like, I remember when it, winning the title meant something. Like, how long, like how they booked Stone Cold Steve Austin mm-hmm. before he won the title. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it was a fucking battle.
Yeah. And really, people, and back then, people still cared about, you know, the championship stuff. I mean, a lot of people know that it's, you know, it's staged and all that, but even then, you know, when someone gets a title, it's because he earned it, because, you know, he performed well or whatever, you know. I mean, for anyone who knows that this whole thing is basically, you know, exhibition sports, you know.
Right, because they don't even call it wrestling anymore, and they get in trouble when they when the superstars even refer to it as wrestling, or they call themselves wrestlers, mm. they get in trouble for that. So, you know,
that's
like,
kind of sad, though.
Yeah, it's a little sad. But, you know, like, we all know it's fake and it's predetermined, mm-hmm. but there's still entertainment to be had. Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, ever since they went PG and they've been trying to please the little kids, it's like, really?
Well,
John Cena.
Have to admit, though, the last couple of weeks they've kind of been letting go of the whole PG thing. I mean, look at what today's Raw was actually fairly. some of the language is probably some of the strongest I've seen from them. So it's
in a while.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of which, mm-hmm. something to mention, something just to something else to hate about John Cena.
Oh, God.
That doesn't sell.
Yeah, he's not good. He's not really good at selling. He was never, honestly, he was never one of the guys I liked or followed. You know, I thought he was, pretty pedestrian. But you know, he has his moments every now and then. But he was.
Look, there's no doubt that he's entertaining. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't really call him. I wouldn't go that far, honestly. I mean, he's tolerable.
And you know what? Everything he does outside of wrestling, all those charities and like Make-A-Wish, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Not, he's a good person. Mm-hmm. But, like, every time he's on screen on wrestling, I was like, oh, you ruin everything.
Yeah, didn't he almost get you to stop watching?
So it was a couple of weeks ago, CM Punk hit him in the head with a wrench, and he almost didn't sell it. Like, there was a point, like, where you saw he was kind of teetering, and he was, like, making it up on the spot right there, whether he should sell that or not. It was terrible. And then, later that night, he comes out like nothing happened. Like, he didn't get hit in the head with a wrench. And, like, and then you see guys like Punk and Morrison, who got the crap beat out of them at the Elimination Chamber. And then tonight they have a match on Raw, and they're both coming out wrapped up and limping. And,
oh,
like,
man.
They have... I'm not going to call the match shitty, but it wasn't a good match because they were so beat up. They were selling what happened to them the night before. John Cena comes out. He's like, I'm the Marine. I'm awesome. And nothing happened to me.
Man, John Cena.
I know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've almost taken up an hour. Thanks for coming on. By the way,
absolutely,
I've been meaning to have you on for a while. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, but
yes.
Next time we'll talk about your other stuff. I mean, you've been writing, and you've been doing other things as well. We'll talk about that stuff next time around, and of course, we'll just talk more comics.
Absolutely. Anytime you want me back, just let me know.
Yeah, did you want to plug anything like your blog or your anything?
No, I haven't written on my blog in months. It's just
I thought you had a good start. You were doing some, some review stuff.
You know what? It's just like I got class now and I got a lot of reading to do. And I think the last thing I posted was those. I wrote 1,300 words on why I hated Iron Man 2. I think that's the last thing I wrote about.
I like that movie. Well, let's not get into it.
No, maybe that's another podcast, but. No, you know, I mean, if anyone liked what I said or whatever, I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, what's your Twitter ID?
Oh, Thwipstar.
Yeah, it's spelled like the Spider-Man sound effect. It's THWIP and then STAR, Thwipstar on Twitter. Yeah, find Antonio because he's very entertaining to follow. And of course, me, I am all over Twitter and Facebook. It's facebook.com/PatLoika or twitter.com/PatLoika. And of course, my blog at PatLoika.com. Thanks to everyone for listening. And don't forget the Deliberate Noise Awards. The Noisy Awards are about to end soon. Go to DeliberateNoise.com and vote for your favorite podcasts. And I am up for nomination as a new single-person podcast. So, yeah, awesome. Give it a look and throw a vote my way, will you?
Vote right. For Pat.
Yeah, you will feel good inside when you do. All right, everybody. Until next week, you guys just take it easy. Thank you.
Clear.